Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you and welcome, Susan.
Hello, everyone. This is Sarah Ellen. I am glad to be with you all this evening, and I'm looking for Susan here. I am not seeing her dialed in yet to the queue, so I am going to hop off for just a moment and see if I can find Susan and get her to here with us this evening. There we go. Yay. Hi.
Didn't recognize my one as wanting to be in the queue.
Well, I'm glad to see you. How are you doing this evening?
I always just dial the one at the end of the number and then expect I'm going to be in the queue. And then I realized, wait a second, it's not showing up. She's not seeing me.
No, you are. Oh.
Yeah, so here we are, hurrah. Oh, my goodness. How are you? What have you been up to?
Oh, wow. Well, it is winter, as they call it here in Florida, so we have just been having fun. I've been outside doing still hurricane debris cleanup, and it's been nice weather to have fires going and just enjoying a lot of time being outside with the goats. We opened up more areas in the woods for them. So having fun watching them do some explorations out there, and just enjoying the season. How about you?
It snowed today. Of course it didn't stay, but at least it was snow, and there were big flakes, and it was so, wintery.
Mm. Wow. Right. Did you have windy cold, or was it just a winter cold?
We are not in the part of New York State that got a big storm. That's out by the lakes, hundreds of miles away.
Nice. So you just had like...
truly a lake effect thing. There's a lot of moisture that comes up out of those lakes. And as we say here, what goes up must come down. Right, that's kind of the opposite of what people usually say, right? What goes up must come down. So all that moisture is going up and coming down, and they were really buried in snow, but we just got a little sprinkling, which soon melted.
Aw, just enough to know it's winter.
Just enough to be able to say, oh, hooray, winter is truly, truly here. Make especially all the evergreens so pretty with the snow dusting them.
For sure. Wow. So how are your goaties? Did Fred go back home and the girls have the place to themselves again?
Well, actually, Fred is still here. We have not been able to turn him home. We have not been able to find Farmer John at home, and we didn't just want to, abandon him there. Not that we would really be abandoning him. This herd of goats, but just doesn't seem right. So we're continuing to try to get hold of Farmer John and return Fred, and meanwhile, he's just... enjoying himself here and not being a nuisance at all. So hooray for that, and hooray for looking forward to the kids in the spring. And for all of you who have been worried, as I have been, about Gordon, I want you to know that this afternoon, at the time when I would ordinarily be at Gordon's for my singing lesson, but wasn't, Gordon actually called me. And he was quite coherent and knew who I was and arranged to come and visit me, to drive over here and visit me on Friday.
Oh, that's so nice, Ethan. Wow.
I'm still in a little, is this really going to happen? Did it really happen? Was that really? You know, it was such a shock for him not to recognize anyone, and it's almost an even bigger shock now that he seems to be recognizing us again.
Wow. I'm not sure I even knew too much about what had happened with him. I mean, I know Gordon,
Before I left to go and visit with my sister in Texas and my friend Betsy in Arizona, Gordon had been having increasing memory distresses. But as I told him, you're really pretty much on the safe side of it if you know it's happening. When you're really senile, you actually don't know that you don't remember.
Right. Yes, I've seen that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's really... Mm-hmm.
As Alzheimer's, believe me, they're not remember. They have no idea that they're not remembering.
Right. Yep.
So I said to him, "Well, it's good that you're disturbed by your lack of memory because that means you're not losing it." And then he just overnight, while I was gone, lost the ability to recognize anyone.
Oh my heavens! Wow.
And wanted to know who we were and why we were in his house.
Oh, my goodness.
It was very... I was sure he'd had a stroke.
Mm.
And Monica, took him to all the scans and tests and went, no, there is nothing, according to the doctors, there's nothing organically wrong with him that should cause him to not recognize people.
Wow. I'm glad he... So, is he recognized people now?
So he called today and he knew who I was.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. How? That would seem so frightening. My goodness. Wow. I'm the loss. Words,
yes, that. Which is why I'm still like, since it, you know, change from one to the other isn't going to change back, kind of thinking and looking and so on.
Oh.
So, you know, this is a good time to go out and have a look around at what berries are still hanging out. The big cedar trees keep their berries. As a matter of fact, it takes 2 years for those berries to ripen. So in that winter of the first year, there are a lot of cedar berries available. And they're very high in antioxidants. All of the small berries are supercharged in antioxidants, which means you do not have to eat a bowl of them. Like chewing on a juniper berry or a cedar berry or two is like taking a multivitamin.
Wow. I didn't
especially in the cold months when you really need those, you know, supercharges of vitamin C and antioxidants and all of that. That you're going to get from just nibbling on the berries. When the English women came here, they brought with them berberis, beauty berry, barb berry, a berry that has really taken over the woodlands of the northeast because the birds love the berries. And the bushes can get, you know, 3-4 feet tall, so the berries are held up above the snow, even if there's heavy snow. And the birds can get to them. And then, of course, the birds gladly and gaily deposit the seeds of these everywhere. And the deer browse the tree branches back so that there's enough light at the forest floor level for those seeds to sprout.
Nice.
Yeah,
wow, what a pretty...
Well, nice, but not so nice, because it crowds out all the native plants. And yet, the reason that it was brought over is because the whole plant is medicinal. The bark, of course, especially medicinal. The root bark, the most medicinal. But even the leaves and the berries, just like the cedar berries, are loaded with lots of important antioxidant vitamins for wintertime immune health. And they're also very rich in berberine, the compound named after them, which is very supportive to the immune system in warding off flus and colds. If you don't have any of those growing around you, you can go to the store and buy cranberries. They are one of the most amazing berries out there. All the things you've heard about blueberries are true for cranberries, but even more so.
Weren't you heading up?
Always look for ways to eat cranberries with a little less sugar. The recipe calls for 1 pound of cranberries and 2 cups of sugar. And you can start by already just cutting that back to 1 cup. But I found that I can get away with even just 1/2 cup of sugar in that amount of cranberries if I add some maple syrup to it after it's cooked. So cook the cranberries. Usually I add citrus peel and some ginger, some water, apple cider, and that 1/2 cup of sugar and cook it. You know, it's still a thick, bubbly cranberry mess. and then I let it cool, and then I stir in, and you can taste it and decide. But because, like, the sweet is kind of on top in a way, it's going to taste sweeter from the maple syrup, and the maple syrup will be happy that it the taste of it is, it's like finishing with dark sesame oil, right? Floats a little on top, like you really get the smell and the taste of it. And if you put it in while you're cooking it, it disappears.
Right. Oh, so true. I get it totally. Wow. So did you do a lot of cranberries?
We're eating berries, and our local Aldi has, Be Still My Heart, chocolate-covered freeze-dried strawberries.
Ooh, that's nice.
So if you've got an Aldi near you, you might want to check it out and see if they have chocolate-covered freeze-dried strawberries.
Wow, freeze-dried. I have never seen a chocolate-covered freeze-dried strawberry. That sounds really yummy.
It is.
Mmm.
What someone might call frighteningly yummy.
Uh-oh. Nice. We've got
Clara control. And I did our first class of our five-class course. We are all Medicine Women, Part 2, Earth. And we talked about being barefoot and getting your bare feet on the earth and why that's important. And there's a wonderful group of students gathered, some of whom were there for part one. And Steve, who runs it, said, oh, the ones who weren't there for part one were so happy that they could buy the recordings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say, oh, you don't need to have attended part one. But truth be told, we are referring to things that we did there, although truly, you know, you could manage without it. So we are, again, very excited to be working together, to be bringing together North and South, and her looking out onto the Pacific Ocean and my looking out onto the Atlantic Ocean. And yet, she is further east than I am.
So strange to think of.
Isn't it, though?
Oh, wow. And I will say, I'm one of the students in that class, and oh, my goddess, it is an amazing class. Last night was exceptional on every level, and especially personal levels, which will come up on Thursday, Susan, but oh, my goodness, wow, that was a wonderful class. And talk about synchronicities. Unbelievable for me. Like, even though, like, I've had some amazing ones, last night was just, I was grinning from ear to ear. It was, wow, so phenomenal. Everyone, if you haven't joined the class yet, there's still time, and you can get the recordings of class one. So, Luz Clara and Susan are so amazing together.
Yeah, we're having a great time. Super great time. And I've now made 78 collages. So I think we gathered like the first 36 or so at the mentor site. So it's time for me to gather them up again, a whole basket full, and get them to the mentor site for you. I'm so enjoying doing it. There's a wonderful correspondence course student who lives in Holland, and she's visiting Australia. And she dropped me a note and said, I'm just loving the collages. And I said back to her, send me a photograph. And she sent me this beautiful photograph from Australia of a, she gave it the correct botanical name. It looks to me like what I would call a bottle bush plant. And a bottle brush plant. This is a long raceme of really like fuzzy flowers stuck out on the end of it. And with the sun behind it, just beautifully illuminated. And I did a collage starring that. So having fun in numerous ways, having fun with the collages and having fun interacting with people around the collages too.
Oh, love. I love every single one I've seen. I can't pick a favorite. They're so good. It's so fun. Like, find the little images that are tucked in there and see the way. Oh, so fun.
Now, I wrote about the fact that our host is not going to be hosting Blog Talk anymore. It's not just us. It's not like anything is going on with us. Susan is here. Sarah is here. But the host, the server there, is not going to be doing it anymore after the first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So our intention is to go on. We just need another platform, I believe it's called. And I know that the wonderful Wise Woman Spiral is looking into that. So we will be in touch with you, but we want you to know that after the first of the year, dialing this number won't get you connected to us.
Mm.
We're going to put it in the e-zine. We'll put it at the mentor site. We'll post it everywhere we possibly can. And if we find out, or we still have a couple more shows, before the end of December, we aren't going to do a show on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. And hopefully we will find out and give you the new number to call for the new old Blog Talk show with Susan and Sarah Ellen.
Hmm. Great. Yes.
At 9 o'clock tonight, Spring Washam is going to be with us. She's considered a pioneer in bringing mindfulness-based meditation practices to diverse communities. She's the author of A Fierce Heart, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment, and The Spirit of Harriet Tubman. So you can stick with us until 9 o'clock. You can come back at 9 o'clock and listen to what Spring Washam is about, writing her book about Lotus Vine Journeys, a one-of-a-kind organization blending indigenous healing practices with Buddhist wisdom.
Mm.
Mm.
Wow. In South America. Wow, interesting.
Interesting, yes.
Yeah.
Quite fascinating. So come on back or stick with us and you'll find out what Spring wants to share with us. Quite fascinating. Anything else that you want to share with us before we start answering questions?
Well, thanks for asking, Susan. I'm all set. And I do see some hands already.
All right, then. We'll remind you that the best way to get noticed around here is to push 1.
That's right. Yes.
Right. That was my problem. I thought I pushed 1, and I thought I wasn't getting noticed, but in fact, because I wasn't getting noticed because I hadn't pushed 1. So push 1, get noticed.
That's right. Listen to Susan. If you have a question, definitely push 1. That will let us see your hand go up in the queue, and then I'll know to call out your area code and open your line so that you can talk live with Susan. I am seeing at this time that there are 4 hands raised, so we'll go right to the first hand in the 815 area code. And the 815, you are live with Susan.
Hello.
Good evening, Susan.
How are you this evening?
I'm wonderful. I have an inquiry for you. The last 2 years, maybe, I have taken your advice and really eliminated scents and essential oils from my life. And I have found that my olfactory nerve is so sensitive. It's like almost a superpower. I can just smell things I could have never smelled before. But with that, my sense of smell is so sensitive, and I'm more sensitive to scents, particularly cigarettes have, like, never smelled good to me, but I am, like, so sensitive to them that whenever I get a whiff, I just, like, feel sick or I have, like, an instant headache. Sometimes it triggers my nervous system. So cigarettes and a couple other scents, even like if other people are using essential oils or perfumes, I feel like almost less resilient because my olfactory nerve is so sensitive now where like scents just like really trigger me and I don't feel good.
I absolutely hear you. And I definitely, you know, found myself as someone walks into the room getting up because I can smell that they're wearing something. And what I find is that more and more people are becoming aware that we share environments and that strong smells in the environment are not a good share. So what can you do? Well, what did ladies do before the horseless carriage? There were some pretty strong smells around before the horseless carriage, you know? Because there were a lot of horses. And horses were doing their business everywhere. And the ladies were wearing long skirts. They carried little sachets of herbs to smell. You can get a little muslin bag and put something that you like the smell of in that bag. Lavender or mint or lemon balm, whatever. It's very light, easy to carry with you, and if you run into a smell that's doing you in, you have a countermeasure.
Next, I have a lavender sachet at home in my drawer.
Yeah.
Great.
So you just need a lavender sachet in your pocket.
Carry it around with me.
Carry it around with you. There you go.
Thank you. And I also wanted to say this Thanksgiving, I had a cranberry sauce, which was the best I have ever had. And it was equal parts cranberries and apples cooked down with
oh,
a little
yeah.
maple syrup and spice. And it was quite lovely.
Ah, oh, yay for the cranberry. Buy them now. They're only in the market for a short time. Put them in your freezer. We like to have cranberry sauce all the time. Cranberry sauce, applesauce, yum, yum. Get your antioxidants right here.
Great. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you. Green blessing.
Green blessing.
All right. And I'm seeing that there are three callers that have pressed one. We'll go to the next hand that is up in the 512 area code. In the 512, you are live with Susan.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm hoping that you can help me just figure something out. I'm 48 years old. I've had one child. And in the last 2 years, I've developed incontinence, but it's only during my luteal phase. And I swear to you, it can be just like a few hours after I ovulate and like clockwork, I will start being incontinent. And then it'll last the last 2 weeks of my cycle. And then often the day before I bleed, I will just suddenly not be incontinent. And then the 5 days of my cycle, sometimes I am, but most of the time I'm not. And then often the last, like day five, I'll be a little incontinent again. And then it's like the first week after that, like day six, seven, eight, nine, ten, I'm just like so happy, free, dry, like, you know, just, and then it just starts all over again. And it's always triggered by ovulation. I talked to my nurse practitioner about this, and she was sort of befuddled, and she suggested I try an estrogen cream, which I never filled the prescription because I know it has something to do with hormones. It's almost like after I gave birth, I would have incontinence for a little while after I gave birth. It just feels like maybe my tissues are thin or something. I don't know if that's in my head, but
that's why she prescribed the estrogen cream, to thicken your tissues.
I didn't know,
she prescribed that cream. And the nice thing about vaginal estrogen cream is it's not systemic. It doesn't go into your blood.
You know, I've listened to you explain, and I've done a fair amount of reading about the hormones. I find it all so fascinating, and just because the reason I didn't fill it was that I was thinking, well, wouldn't it be like progesterone related? I don't know where to start with this. I don't.
What we can say is that the estrogen cream that she prescribed for you is highly successful.
Okay.
At thickening tissues and easing the kind of incontinence that you're talking about. Now, could you also do it by exercise and lifestyle changes? Yes. But it's somewhat easier to use the estrogen cream to help you while you're getting there.
So you're saying that and it has a good record of being safe.
Absolutely safe.
I'm just so wary of, you know, just the estrogen.
I totally understand. And check it out, but it's quite different when it's used as a vaginal cream.
Will it somehow affect my liver?
Not that we know of.
Okay.
It does not go into your blood.
Okay.
It stays localized in the tissues you put it on.
So I'm just trying to understand the hormones. So you don't think that a progesterone cream would be an estrogen cream to thicken the tissues?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you, are you drinking Nourishing Herbal Infusion right now?
Oh, yes, of course, for many years.
Right. And Dr. Kegel, who created the exercises that we know are so useful in helping us have the muscular strength to be continent, suggested that you do your first set of Kegels before you get out of bed.
Okay.
So you're laying in bed, and you do a set of 20 to 25 Kegels laying in bed, and then you swing your legs over the side of bed, and you do another 20 to 25 sitting in the bed, and then, like most people, you're going to go pee, and you're sitting in the toilet. When you're done, you do another 20 to 25 sitting in the toilet. So that's his recommendation.
I read this thing at the gynecologist's office that said that most women are doing Kegels incorrectly, that they should actually be focused more on, like, holding it as if you're trying to hold a bowel movement in, not necessarily just urinary flow. Have you ever heard that?
It's difficult to explain in words how to do a Kegel. And the difficulty with saying that you're trying to hold a bowel movement in, usually gives anyone who's trying to do it the idea to literally clench their butt muscles. And if you clench your butt muscles, then you can't contract your pelvic floor.
Yes. Okay. No,
so,
I
understand what she's getting at. And is it possible that women are doing Kegels right? It's certainly possible, which I think is quite interesting, that Dr. Kegel himself said, do your first set laying down. And I find that really critical for most women, because when you're laying down, you're not doing it against gravity. And it helps you to isolate the muscles. These are interior muscles. If your thighs or your butt or your belly or any of those big external muscles are clenching or you're gritting your teeth, then you're definitely doing it wrong. It's a, it's not a subtle movement, but it's interior movement.
I really need to read a little more about this. And then, you do the Kegel and you sort of hold it and pull, like, up.
Well, right? The physical therapist that I worked with suggested that you try out different patterns.
Okay.
Like, she liked hold and then release. And hold and then release. And hold, 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 release. And hold, and release. And hold, and release. And hold, 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 hold. Now, when you're holding, pulling the pelvic floor up, and so you're pushing the diaphragm up, so you want to be exhaling.
Exhaling, sorry, right now.
When you're releasing, the diaphragm is dropping down, the pelvic floor is dropping down, and you're exhaling. So what this also means is that the muscular movement of the diaphragm and the pelvic floor are linked.
Wow. That is so helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking.
This is so important. I read somewhere that the number one reason people go into old folks' homes is that because of incontinence. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't verified that. But, I mean, that makes sense. It's so important for women to know about all this.
I know that you know that there are some really fabulous products out there to help you deal with this.
Oh, yes, sure.
Really good products, because you're far from being alone.
I know. I often think that, can we have a moment of gratitude for these products? I mean, it's like a wonder of modern life. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. I think the same thing about adult diapers, because my mother is at that point in her journey, and I'm just like, have a moment of gratitude for these adult diapers, really.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's really helpful.
It gives them ease to the caretakers.
Indeed. Guess I will go fill that estrogen cream then. It's just quite pricey, but I suppose you don't use that much of it, so
no,
I will try that out.
A tiny amount. And again, the idea is that you're going to use it to plump those tissues and get that going while you start doing more exercises.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a day for me, the day that I bent over to get something, sneezed, and didn't wet my pants.
Hallelujah.
Right? It was like, uh-oh, the deadly duo, you know?
I mean, I had to call you this month because this cycle, it was the worst it's ever been. It was just like, I couldn't eat. It was just coming out. And I was like, what in the world is happening? I mean, usually it's not like
right, when you would get up in the morning, it would just run down your leg?
Not first thing in the morning, but definitely after, like, drinking something.
Right after the surgery, that's how, you know, I basically, first, no control at all. I really would just get up and, you know, in the hospital, I'd be amazing, know that they could leak in the roof. So it's a lot of work, you know, to roll back from that, but... you have to find yourself, you have to, you know, to keep yourself comfortable and what you're getting there. You know, struggling week by week, keep by keep, and just, you know.
Oh, Susan, your phone is cutting out.
It's within one's ability to do it, because we have, you know, not just thanks for all the products, but thanks for these amazing bodies.
For sure.
That are always ready to learn a new trick.
I'm just thank you so much for this. And just one last thing, I'm comforted to hear that really just hear it out of your mouth, that it doesn't go into your liver, your bloodstream, anything like that. I have these like benign tumors that in my liver that they say are estrogen fed, or I don't know, whatever. They've been there for years. We just watch them here and there. But so that's good for me to know. So good.
Yeah, and somebody just sent me a scientific article. Actually, really quite conclusively showing that the estrogens, the plant estrogens in red clover, block the estrogen receptor sites on tumors.
Lucky for me, it's delicious.
They're wonderful, huh? So you're doing great, and I think that you're going to be happy with the estrogen cream. And double-check me, you know, but so far as I know, we're not seeing any liver problems with use.
Thank you so much, and just thank you for your attention, and even just that, just your presence even over the phone, I find that very healing, and I thank you very much.
Green blessings. Good night.
Thank you.
All right, and I'm seeing three callers at this time that have pressed 1 to let us know they've got a question, and we will move right to the next hand in the 336 area code. In the 336, you're with Susan.
Green blessings, Susan and Sarah Ellen.
Green blessings.
So excited, just so you both know, on Tuesday, everybody said, be quiet. It's time. Time for what? Are you cooking supper?
You're cooking supper.
No, that's what they think the time is for. I'm like, no, I've already cooked your supper. It's already here, radio, with Susan and Sarah Helen. Nip it. I'm going to make it quick, because everybody else has stuff too, but I'm going to make it quick. I called before Thanksgiving about my second grandkid that just would not stop, like there's something wrong, whatever. And you said goat milk. Try the goat milk.
Yes, I remember talking with you.
Yep. Now, this is a reason that my Tuesdays are happy. Do you know everything that you said was 100% absolutely true? Now, if you go from, like, Enfamil, Similac, like, whatever everybody puts their kids on, not that quick.
Uh-huh.
Within 24 hours, there was a complete difference. Now, here's how I know that I wasn't full of, I won't say the word, I'm not sure what we can or cannot say on here, but my daughter, oh, my God, Mom, well, you have to let Susan know, you know, Susan, but you, yeah, all right, she literally thought you were my next-door neighbor. I said, you know that I've never met Susan, and Susan is not somebody that I see on a regular basis. I know, but you talk to her, and he's not crying, he's not fussy, he's not screaming for no reason. He, you know, he goes, he sleeps, Mom, he sleeps. Like, he'll take his bottle, he doesn't sit up, he lays down, and, like, he rests. His fist isn't balled up, his feet aren't curled up, like talons, he sleeps.
I am so happy to hear this.
That's the reason I'm excited for Tuesday, is I've never met you. I don't, like, there is no physical connection except what I know about Susan Weed. Like, again, never met. I don't see you every week. You're not my neighbor. It's not gossip. It's not, well, my kid tried this. Immediately. Well, you got to tell Susan, right, you know, it's not my. Mom, I can sleep. I sleep. I'm not frustrated. I'm not upset. I'm not ready to toss them in the washing machine. Like, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so hard on you as a mom. It's like your baby's cry is so much worse to your ears than it is to anyone else's.
Because you don't know. You know they need something, but you don't know what they need. But you know, or you think you should automatically know what they need, but you don't. So that amplifies the, not anger at the child, but it amplifies the anger within yourself because you think you should know. And you don't always know. Sometimes you need a Susan.
Well, now we have found a way to make this baby boy happy, and now we're happy.
Yep, and the next thing is we got a cramp of Christmas. I'm so excited about that.
All right.
But the next thing I did want to say.
Yeah.
And I was embarrassed. I should have told you the last time, but I thought she's going to be so damn dumb. I'm not going to. All right. My husband has one talent and one talent only. Snoring. Can pull the wallpaper off of the neighbor's house, like snoring. So every night I go to bed. I put my pods in. What are you going to listen to? Well, it is really every show I've ever missed, every broadcast I've ever missed, I started from the beginning, and I'm with them. I literally fall asleep to Susan. Wake up with Susan. For real. Like, for real. Like, it's just my
And I have your husband to thank for this, and your husband snoring to thank for this. What's his name?
Look, you have Keith. You have no idea. Like, I want to throat punch him in the gut and in the throat. Like, it's just so much. I'm like, all right, my bitching has done no good, so I'm just going to rectify it myself. So now we're podcast listening. Business. All right. The morning, woke up. Did I? No. I didn't talk to Susan. It's not Tuesday. I didn't make the phone call.
There you go.
Dream.
Instead of snoring, you have
dream. No, the dream. was craziest thing. Where did Sarah Ellen move to? Florida.
Yes.
Florida. Right?
Yes.
I think I went to Florida when I was 8 years old. I am currently 53. Like, that is not anything I relate to in Florida. So I wake up, go to the bathroom, and wash my face. What the hell? And have you ever had a dream that just, as soon as you wake up, comes back to you, but not really, but it comes back in bits and pieces? I have never. And I swear to goodness, it was because I had went to bed with you and Sarah Ellen, and I woke up with you and Sarah Ellen, that we were looking for herbs in Florida. And I said, why in the hell are you looking for herbs in Florida? I don't know. Maybe you should have asked Sarah Ellen. It was a whole thing for like this half a day period. Like, did you really just, like you were there with them in Florida, like on vacation? I swear to God, it was, had to be in the podcast, but that's how I go to sleep and have caught up on stuff I had probably missed before I even knew who you were. Caught up on it. But apparently we were in Florida looking for herbs. Looked at the goat. Yes, she does have goats. She transported her goats. Had to have them tagged and everything.
That's exactly right.
It was standing in the midst of y'all.
It's so interesting when dreams are so vivid like that, right?
That's the crazy thing. Not all the time. My dreams are not always specifically vivid. Like, I may remember a week later, a day later, I don't wake up in the morning and be like, well, bam, I just had a dream. Mm-mm. No. Does that make sense? Because it does to me.
Yeah. So what I want to know is, what did we find? What plants did we find?
I didn't get that far. I was too busy.
We'll have to go back at it.
I was too busy focusing on the fact. Wait a second. I didn't go to Florida. I didn't hang out with. No. I do not. But specifically the transporting of the goats and the tags and it was like I had to follow protocol from going to one state to the other, transporting livestock, and that wasn't a podcast or whatever I listened to in my sleep. Like, I remember I literally listened to that prior to. But when that happened, it all resonated. Me, it was, well, she's moving. Like, she's moving to another state. But, yeah, she's also moving what she cares about. And then her husband, if I'm not mistaken, got there before her, and then she came a day after, or whatever. Like, it was a whole, and I'm sitting here, I don't think I could have done that. I would have not entrusted Mr. Schnorr in there with transporting any livestock that I own. So kudos to Sarah Ellen's husband, because I wouldn't have done that. I would have been on the transport, if that makes sense. Like, it's not just random with me. I'm even wild and embarrassed. I can't tell her that. But that was the most vivid dream I have had in many a year.
Thank you for sharing it with us.
Well, yep. However stupid it was, in my mind, I shouldn't have said it. But I'm for your guest tonight. And here's how I know this is where I'm supposed to be on Tuesday. 2 days, Monday and today. What's wrong with you? I don't know. Something's off. Something ain't really off. It can't really put my finger on it, but it's something. I'm anxious. I'm easily irritated. It's something. 2 days.
Yes.
I haven't meditated. I have not meditated. I have not grounded myself. I have not went out and sat. Now I sat with my goats. Like when I go out in the morning to do my feeding with my pigs, my goats, my chickens, I actually talk to them, sit with them, ask them, how are you doing? Are you okay today? And if I look at one, like, I know. I don't think you're okay. I'll be back. In other words, does that even make sense? Like, I resonate, but I haven't done it. Preoccupied, busy, something else that's taken me away, and then in that guilt. All right, you didn't accomplish much today. Yes, I did. I did all these things. No, you missed what was important. You didn't check in. You didn't sit with them. You didn't do. So I am, that's how I know I'm where I'm supposed to be on Tuesday. Hadn't pre-thought, hadn't looked it up, nothing. And so I went to call in and I thought, well, who is that? Wow. Because that is what I asked for. I asked, what have I not done? What am I missing? Why is everything off?
And it is so true. And you have to be still enough to, and quiet enough to hear
him. You have to.
You are doing.
You have to hear it.
Yes.
And I've also been researching, because I got the email, first of the year, Lost Talk Radio, gone. Who's going to do? What am I going to do? I'm not going to rely on Mr. Schnorr.
We're going to be gone.
And
we're not going away. We're changing. We're not quite sure exactly how it's changing.
Where?
I'm not going to be gone. We'll be here.
But I'm looking, researching.
At the same time. And on Tuesday night, our goal is to keep it Tuesday night at 7:30 East Coast time.
We need a new platform. And you can make it Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It's going to be difficult.
We would follow you wherever you go, Susan. We would follow you, Sarah Ellen,
you.
And Justine. Wherever you went, we would follow you.
All right. Well, hopefully we're just going to go around.
Good night and green blessings.
Corner and it'll be seamless and easy. And we'll look back at it and say, oh, why did you all make such a fuss about it? That's what we always like. But look,
everybody
back
was afraid of change. Really, truly, from the bottom of my heart, I love each and every one of you ladies, and you make a difference every time.
I don't know if it's been announced yet, but there's a Sarah Ellen and I are going to have a whole teleseminar, because we could talk a lot more, but we don't, because I want to answer people's questions.
Limited.
We set aside a time, and it's coming up. Is it this Thursday, Sarah Ellen, or next Thursday?
It is this Thursday.
It's this Thursday, right? 48 hours from now, basically. Sarah Ellen and I will be talking for an hour and a half, so come and join us. It's going to be
fun. I'm down for an hour and a half. I can keep my mouth shut and just listen, because it is, you make a difference. Your children make a difference. And thank you again, because you've made a huge difference. On this end of the world, you've made a huge difference. Good night, and green blessings.
Green blessings. Good night.
Oh, what fun. All right. And looks like there are two callers with their hands up. We'll go to the 860 for our next caller. And the 860, you are live with Susan.
Good evening, Susan. It's so great to be on your show and be able to ask you some questions and get some insight.
Please, go right ahead. Yes.
Oh, sorry. So I'm going to get right to it. I am 34 weeks pregnant. This is my third child. And sorry, I'm a little bit emotional. I tested positive for GBS, and I wanted to pick your brain on what my midwife has suggested and see if you have any other insights or guidance.
I'm not sure what GBS is.
Oh, that would be group B strep. Would you have further background?
Oh, good. All right. Because the first thing that came up in my search was a rare neurological disorder.
Thankfully, it's a lot more common than that. No, so the group B strep bacteria.
When my sister was a midwife, her partner was a very wonderful, very intelligent woman named Anne Fry.
Mm-hmm.
And Anne Fry wrote the book, Blood Work in the Childbearing Year.
Okay.
And when I said to her, and it's a huge book, it's like 600 or 700 pages. And when I said to her, well, what would you suggest in terms of blood work, this look of horror passed across her face, and she said, nothing.
Okay.
She said, the more you look, the more you'll find.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you find, the more you're going to want to treat.
Ah, yes.
And then you're going to have conflicts.
Absolutely.
Because the treatment could be iatrogenic. Treatment could be harmful to the baby.
Right, that's what I'm facing
right now.
That you want to
treat because you think that what you found could be harmful to the baby.
Yeah.
So it's a time when you really have to sit down and be very clear about what is actual, what is fearful.
Mm-hmm.
So you've tested positive for a certain kind of bacteria.
Yes, ma'am.
So what?
Okay. It is very worrisome to me. So to hear your not nonchalantness, but yeah.
What are the consequences of this infection? I mean, obviously it's not real bad because you didn't even know you had it.
Well, so that's the thing. So in the beginning of pregnancy, you get the urinary tract, or just the urinary culture, and they culture your urine. I did not have any group B strep present in that, so it had not if I had it then, it did not colonize my bladder, meaning it wasn't a serious infection. I have no symptoms, so I'm asymptomatic. The studies that were done on group B strep were done in the 70s, and the protocol for reporting on certain studies was not in place yet, so they may have omitted or not tested things properly. I mean, there's a whole article on it on evidence-based birth. But for, I mean, if you do have symptoms, it can be serious. So you can have preterm birth, an early rupturing of the waters, fever, low birth weight, and that's not, if the baby
Let's think about things for a minute, okay?
Yes.
Early rupture of the waters.
Mm-hmm.
How early are we talking about?
They did not specify in any study that I came across.
Right. So they may mean 8 hours.
Right. We don't know.
We really don't know. And how often was there a premature birth?
No information on that. No hard data.
How,
I don't believe that I could
how
find.
How premature?
That also was not specified.
Like
I said, the information
about,
available
is
very
poor. About fear-mongering.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is not factual evidence.
Definitely not.
Also,
that's the most concerning part.
Very important. These statistics refer to people eating a standard American diet.
Yes.
Is that you?
Not generally, but my vaginal microbiome is probably off due to the horrible amount of stress I had recently and the fact that everybody just had a birthday and I just baked 3 giant birthday cakes. So not doing super well in the diet department, but having found out this, I have cut out all sugars and starches, and I'm trying to eat just, you know, like leafy greens, vegetables. We have venison available, fish, so healthier meats.
Good.
Of course, drinking red raspberry leaf and nettle infusion.
Good. The whole thing about cutting out sugar and starch, to me, is quite absurd.
Okay.
Do you understand that everything you eat, whether it's venison or leafy greens, gets turned into sugar in order for your mitochondria to turn it into energy?
Yes.
So
I didn't think about it as much on the meat side.
You eat turns into sugar anyhow. What is the point of avoiding sugar and starch? The point is to avoid super processed food.
White sugars.
But it's not the point to avoid cranberry sauce or brown rice or, you know.
Right?
So when people say, oh, you know, I stopped eating, you know, sugar and flour, you know, and they were eating the worst of the worst, well, they've improved their diet. Not because of the not.
Right.
And especially when you're pregnant, the grains, the whole grains help maintain even blood sugar.
Yes, it has been quite difficult inventing meals. And I'm pretty good in the kitchen and, you know, not getting hangry, which is hard enough being pregnant this you know, late on anyway.
Really, you really need grain and it's not going to, like, feed. Grain doesn't feed the bacteria.
Okay.
Any more than leafy greens do.
Right, I got you.
Right. You're right to avoid, don't drink a liter of soda pop.
You goodness, no.
Right. Don't do that. Right. And don't, you know, don't make ice cream your breakfast. You know, the same things to do. But you didn't personally eat all 3 birthday cakes by yourself, did you? You had some help?
I did not, but I don't usually eat sugar. Like, I'm not a sweets person. And unfortunately, these cakes came out really good, so I definitely ate more than I normally would have.
Now, these cakes that you made, did you use any kind of whole grain flour in them?
I did not, no. My
Well, the next
the
time
people
you
eating
make,
the cakes are
next,
not very
you
health friendly.
Try replacing even a little bit of the white flour with whole grain flour. You'll be very surprised.
Absolutely.
At how a really delicious whole wheat pastry flour is. And I had people just, you know, used to baking with white flour, just start, you know, using 2 cups, replace a 1/4 cup of the whole wheat flour.
Absolutely. It won't affect rising or anything. Well, I guess it would probably have higher gluten content.
It's going to make your products better. Eventually what is going to happen is you're going to ditch the white flour because you're going to say, wow, you know, the texture, the flavor, the everything of the whole grain product is so much better.
I could definitely imagine that in bread for sure. I love baking bread.
We make 100% whole wheat cakes, and they are light and they're wonderful.
Excellent. I will definitely have to try that sometime.
So you don't have to jump into 100% right away. Just add a little bit. Just so that when you have a piece, you're not smashing yourself about it.
Absolutely.
And usually what I see is if I have plenty of minerals, then while that piece of cake is really inviting, I'm probably going to push it away when it's half eaten.
Yes, definitely.
Which is very different from the person who is demineralized and they want a big piece and then they're like, you know, picking up the crumbs and licking.
Right, craving those chocolate, like, and sugars. Definitely.
So,
okay.
Again, cut yourself a little slack on it. It's not like you're an alcoholic who fell off the wagon with one drink here.
I'm just so concerned.
The sugar and the grains are not bad. And I would guess that the possibility of these bad things happening is less than 1/10 of 1%.
Yeah, so it is very, so if you are colonized and, so the normal protocol is to get IV antibiotics at least 4 hours before birth, so while you're in labor, and we all know how sketchy that sounds. We don't want our immune systems wiped out as we're delivering a baby, especially since it also wipes out the baby's immune system, and there's no studies done on that, but we can use our brains and know how that's not good. So that's standard protocol, even if I tested again negative. So say I was able to repair my microbiome and was healthy and, you know, all those things, they still recommend antibiotics. Oh, goodness. I have the worst pregnancy brain. Where was I going with this?
That's okay.
I'm so sorry.
what you're saying is, basically what I said, is too bad you were tested because you have a black mark on your card and you're going to have to struggle to make them not give you antibiotics.
So my midwife is definitely really good with at least being open to herbal remedies or just natural remedies. Unfortunately, she's doesn't have a lot of personal experience with them. So, so what my point was before is that when the baby comes out, whether you have antibiotics or not, I believe the statistics were 50-50, so 50% if the baby would get infected or not, and then it drops down to like a 1 or 2% who actually have serious complications, which can be lifelong if they are infected.
Again, these are situations in which we're looking at a population that is not well nourished.
Right, the normal American.
Right. And that's not you.
Absolutely.
It's not 1% of the time for you.
Right.
You have taken yourself out of being able to see yourself in those statistics now.
Yes, I'm definitely a worrywart, and the fact that, like, there's anything wrong in this pregnancy being my third, I'm like, what did I do?
And you have other children.
Yes, I have two children who were born naturally, unmedicated, all healthy, great, no complaints. Thank God.
Thank God.
Yes.
So the answer to what you did was too much. Don't let them test you. Don't let them do ultrasounds. Don't let them take your blood. Just say no. You've already had two healthy pregnancies. There's no reason to think this one will be any different.
Mm-hmm.
And because you are a worrier, I believe that's what you said, it is critically important for you not to let them do this.
Absolutely. Okay, so before I go, I don't know if you've ever heard of a...
In fact, I would lean into the fact that you're a worrier and say to them, you don't have to worry. You don't have to give me these tests because I'm going to be doing all the worrying. And believe me, if I think something is going wrong, I'm going to be right here begging for a test.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So let's not look for things. Let's not follow your protocol because it's bad for my, it's bad for your mental health what they're doing.
Right. Gotcha. Thank you so much. Before I go, I was recommended this healing vaginal suppository by a woman I have not heard of, but my midwife asked me why I was leery of doing this suppository, and I wanted to get an answer because she does recommend, well, will continue to recommend it to other patients if they have the GBS. I wanted to get your opinion on it. The recipe is melt a quarter cup of coconut oil and a quarter cup of cocoa butter in a small saucepan. Turn off the heat and add 2 tablespoons of calendula oil, half teaspoon of thyme or oregano essential oil, 2 tablespoons
of
rosehip vinegar.
You do not want to do it. You don't want to have anything to do with essential oils, and you certainly do not want to be putting essential oils in your vagina.
That's what I thought when I read it. I was like, oh, Lord, like, no.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so...
If you want to do something, you can use an oak bark sitz bath. Are you anywhere where you can get hold of any oak bark?
Oh, yes. We are in the same state. I'm in central New York. So,
well,
what
hey,
kind
no
of
problem,
oak?
Right? This is the one time when herbalists are telling the truth. We really mean the bark of the oak. You go out to somebody's wood pile and just pick up a hunk of oak bark. And boil it up. It's got a lot of tannins. Remember, it's going to stain everything it touches.
Right.
But you sit yourself down in that, and it kills all the bad bacteria. It totally restores your biome, your vaginal biome.
Interesting. Okay, so what I have been doing that's more natural is I have, like, 3 times a week I'm inserting a clove of garlic into the vagina. Obviously, it's not punctured or anything because that wouldn't be fun. And then I'm taking a vaginal probiotic and a normal one that's higher quality orally, and then the vaginal one as a suppository at night and eating like a cup of yogurt every day. Is that overkill?
Seems like something to do.
Yes.
Will it change anything? The studies showing that eating yogurt changes the vaginal biome are non-existent.
Right.
And in my experience, there's only one brand of yogurt that has any live culture in it at all.
So I do have an heirloom counter yogurt culture called Film Yolk.
You're making your own yogurt.
I can, yes. I have that culture. I can make it.
Then
that
you know you're actually
be
getting
better.
Then you know you're getting the stuff because anything you buy, unless it's damning.
Right, it gets irradiated, I believe. Does it?
It's
or pasteurized?
Not. It's not, doesn't have enough active culture to turn my unpasteurized goat's milk into yogurt.
Oh, wow.
The only yogurt I can find that will turn my unpasteurized raw goat's milk into yogurt is Danon.
Interesting. Good to know.
And I've had people with microscopes look and say, I can see it under the microscope. You can look at the Danon, you can actually see there's like actually live culture in there.
Live culture.
And there are others, okay. There might have been live culture when they put the lid on it, but it ain't alive now.
Right, that's why you get all that liquid at the top.
Well, that's just whey. That's
oh. It wouldn't be the leftover from the bacteria processing
no.
all the
stuff. Whey is the liquid part of the milk.
Gotcha.
So when you get thickened yogurt, the whey has been strained out.
Yes.
It's just part of the milk, the whey, curds and whey.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing wrong with it at all. So the things that I know that can definitely counter this kind of infection are berberine and oak bark.
Okay. I have the oak bark. Any particular variety of oak?
Well, garlic, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying things to... Yeah, to try them.
And it certainly won't hurt you to eat yogurt and to put yogurt up there. Nothing
yeah.
wrong with it. You just don't know if it's really going to do anything or not. But the
right.
berberine from a barberry or anything else like Oregon grapefruit, quite a few plants with berberine in them.
Okay, yeah, I can look that up.
Yeah, very effective. And I think a sitz bath in a berberine-rich herb or oak bark is more accessible to women than making a remedy that calls for at least 5 ingredients.
Agreed, for sure. Yeah, I mean, if you can walk out into your backyard and grab some oak bark and throw it in a pot and boil it and sit down in it, it doesn't get better than that.
It doesn't get better than that. And right, it's an antibacterial, it's an antiviral, right? It's going to restore the biome to your vagina. It's astringent. Oak bark really is like an angelic presence.
Well, that's great. I will certainly try it.
It is, and yet how fabulously it works. And woman after woman has said to me, oh my gosh, nothing had worked, nothing had worked, and I couldn't get rid of this, and I couldn't get rid of that. And 2 sitz baths and oak bark, and boom, it's all fine.
Oh, that's excellent. Music to my ears. Actually,
all right, well, say goodbye.
Before I go, I wanted to say one more thing.
Okay.
When I was a kid, my mom came and did one of your classes back in 2007, and I was 6 years old and lucky enough to meet you.
Oh, my
I'm
gosh.
So happy that you're still helping us.
Thank you for sharing that. That really brings a smile to my heart.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Green blessings. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, let's see if we can answer one more question here before our guest.
All right, we'll go right to the 312. And the 312, you are live with Susan.
Hey, Susan, this is Molly. I'm not calling with a question. I'm calling with a call to action.
Tell us.
All right, I'm so excited to. You are such an example of female power, and I love the space that you create to connect women to their power and, claim their authority, claim their responsibilities for their lives, and also to fight for our rights, which I know you've done for many, many decades now. But I just got off a really amazing Zoom, and I realized that it was Blog Talk tonight, and your audience would be interested in this. There is currently a push to publish the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. It's been ratified by all the states. We are 1 signature away from a constitutional amendment that will say women are equal under the law. and we cannot be discriminated against on the basis of sex. This would be an amazing sword for women, legal sword, as we're entering very dark days. Put Republicans on their back heels, have to fight and say that we don't deserve these rights. I mean, but it will be in the Constitution. It'll be the 28th Amendment to the Constitution. So I know I don't have a whole lot of time. If people are interested in encouraging this to happen, you can go to BidenPublishedTheERA.org. The only reason it wasn't published after all the states ratified it in 2020 is because there was an advisory opinion from the Trump Justice Department. So he's not going to do this. And the archivist at the time took that into consideration and chose not to publish the amendment. But Biden has an opportunity to do this as a lame duck president. And, you know, we can enter this new era swinging and hopefully fight for our dignity, for our health, for our rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell everybody again where they can go.
Yes. BidenPublishTheERA.org. It's
BidenPublishTheERA.org. All right, everybody get on it. Call to action.
Yes, please. Thank you so much, Susan. You're the best.
Thank you. Green blessings.
Green blessings.
All right. And before we hop over with our guests, I would like to ask, please, Spring, if you are with us in the queue, I need you to press 1 so that I can see your hand. We were not able to get your phone number, so I don't know what you're dialing in from, but no worries. If you would just press 1, then I will know which line to open. So, Spring, if you are with us, please press 1, and after Susan gives your introduction, I will open your line. All right. Hopefully, Spring will do that. Okay, I think she has. So there we go. I think we're ready to get started.
All right. Spring Washam is considered a pioneer in bringing mindfulness-based meditation practices to diverse communities. She's a well-known teacher, healer, and visionary leader based in Oakland, California. The author of A Fierce Heart, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment, and The Spirit of Harriet Tubman, Awakening from the Underground. Spring Washam is one of the founding teachers at the East Bay Meditation Center, an organization that offers Buddhist teachings with attention to social action and multiculturalism. She is a member of the Teachers Council at Spirit Rock Meditation Center, offering teachings on Buddhist philosophy, insight meditation, and loving kindness practices. Spring is also the founder of Lotus Vine Journeys, a one-of-a-kind organization that blends indigenous healing practices with Buddhist wisdom for transformative retreats in South America. Spring Washam has practiced and studied Buddhist philosophy in both the Theravada and the Tibetan schools of Buddhism since 1999. That's 25 years. Spring is also a shamanic practitioner and has studied indigenous healing practices since 2008. Welcome to the show, Spring. I'm getting a lot of noise, but not a voice.
Are you getting a voice?
Ellen?
I am not getting a voice. This is the number that has pressed 1, but let's put that call out again. Spring, I do not have a number for you, so if you could please press 1, that would allow me to see your hand, and I can go ahead and get your line open and get you on with your interview with Susan. All right. I am not seeing anyone press 1 at this time. I'm going to go back to this. Oh, here we go. Awesome. All right. In the 510, I think this is you, Spring.
It is. Hi. So sorry. I was on the phone. I could hear everything.
We're so glad you pushed one and that you're with us, Spring. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry about that. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Uh-huh. What interesting work you are doing. What do you want to start talking about? Do you want to start talking about your books? Do you want to start talking about your transformative retreats in South America? What?
Well, yeah, thank you so much.
What's on your lips?
Idea. Yeah, I love the idea of talking to wise women about things that we're doing. But, yeah, I offer retreats of all kinds in the U.S. and around the world. And, yeah, they're all focused a lot on opening the heart, healing trauma, and just, you know, remembering more and more of who we are. And it's really about a path of love.
It's really about the path of love.
Yes.
Yeah. So on that path of love, you have found that Buddhist philosophy and meditation are worthy vehicles.
Yeah. You know, I've discovered through, you know, when I was a child, I wrote a lot about this in my first book, which I called A Fierce Heart, which was about trying to understand all the confusion in the world, you know, all the suffering. And when you grow up with a lot of trauma and a lot of, you know, your parents have trauma and everyone's confused and everyone's emotional, you know, as a young person growing up, I kept wondering, well, what is the way out of this? Or how do you make sense of this? And where is there freedom in this? You know, it just can't be one day after suffering. So that led me to meditation practice as a very young person to try to understand how thoughts affect the mind, you know, our thinking and our stories. And so that got me really interested in meditation and Buddhism. And I also studied Hinduism. And, you know, I love to study world religions and different methodologies and perspectives that focus on trying to understand suffering and then freedom.
Well, I know that Buddha is credited with saying something on the order of pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice.
Right. And it's kind of like, well, what does that mean? You know what I mean? It feels like, how do you get to that state? A lot of people, you know, including myself, wanted to understand that. Like, how is it that I can deal with my mind? And how do I deal with other people's minds and all of the drama and the turmoil? So the path of meditation and mindfulness, I think that's really what it's about, is becoming mindful and practicing sanity, you know, how to be a sane, loving person. That's what I'm really interested in. That's all I'm
practicing
mind.
Sanity in times of insanity.
Yeah.
Quite
exactly.
The challenge.
Very. It's extremely. And so that's what we're all, I think, trying to do, you know, to live in wisdom is to practice sanity, staying sane. How does one stay in their heart, stay filled with grace and forgiveness and compassion when it feels like so much is happening? It's a tall order.
It is indeed a tall order. I often chuckle about Ram Dass saying to his guru, it's so awful, and his guru saying, it's perfect, Ram Dass. And Ram Dass going, it's not perfect, it's awful.
Right, and Maharaji with his infinite wisdom saying, just love, serve,
all
and
perfect.
Remember. Yeah, it's the perfect conditions, right, to keep looking at our thoughts and our stories. And yeah, it's really, really powerful.
And it also, I think, is very important that we believe that our thoughts have power.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of to understand, too, where to put the thoughts in the hierarchy of attention. You know, what thoughts should be tended to and what thoughts we can just let go of and no longer be sort of a victim of or be ruled over, and just to see that thoughts have power, but we do have this great capacity for discernment. And there's a lot of power in discernment, knowing what to focus on and what to let go of. And sometimes we have to work really hard to let go of the stories and the thoughts that are not good for us. You know, they're detrimental to our well-being and others around us. And I think that's a really important moment where you can begin to practice this discernment, which is awareness and mindfulness, you know, that we don't just have to follow all of these really painful stories, and we can begin to choose differently.
Yes. For me, there's always been the kind of Western way of, we're going to talk about the trauma. We're going to go back. We're going to relive the trauma. We're going to, like, you know, find that inner child and get that inner child and deal with it. And then the meditation way, which is, we're not going to entertain that at all. We're not going to deny it, but we're not bringing it for tea and crumpets.
Mm-hmm.
Going on.
Yeah, I think there's a place in all of us that, like, just in healing, working with my own family traumas and traumas, it's like there was a time where we did that practice and the process of looking at it, right? But we can't stay there. And I think that's the danger. That's kind of what we have to move on from that. You know, it's like we honor it, we go through it. But I think there is this habit, like, we can't move past it, right? And we get stuck in it. And so I do appreciate meditation works with it, not so much as a story, but as the energy, right? Instead of looking at stories, we just begin to feel emotion and let go of it. The danger always are the stories we tell and how much emphasis we put into them. You know, it's like we can make them real every moment, or we can just start to let them go when we know we've already, you know, we've already examined that. We've gone through that. Now we just have to sit with the emotional level. And that's the part that people don't want to be with in the West. We don't know how to be with difficult emotions, right? We want to repress them or we want to run away from them. But there is a certain period, I feel, and I don't know if you've noticed this, that when we go beyond the story, we're left with the body, and the body has to feel, you know, we don't have to attach a story to it. We could just feel the rawness of love or anger or fear or hurt, you know. We move into this kind of unspoken energetic territory, which can be really helpful. You know, that's the juice of the meditation, to start feeling our way through it.
Yes, my first mentor was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Death and Dying,
she's
right?
Just all about the feeling.
Mm-hmm. And especially about the anger. And being really present, moment to moment. This is still decades before mindfulness meditation were even words that could come out of our mouths, one right after the other. And it was kind of amazing when I was writing my most recent book, Abundantly Well, and I wanted to have some, you know, science on meditation. And science cannot get a grip on meditation because meditation is so many different things. Like, I noticed that you specify mindfulness meditation. And that helps narrow it down a little bit. But there are, like, saying meditation is about like saying exercise. Right?
Right. Yeah, that's so true. You have to really think about, well, what perspective is that coming from, right? There's so many different practices, especially now. We're really in this, like, amazing period where all these teachings are so accessible, right? Everything is online. Everything's available. There's 500 guided practices. But I think if you really get down to it, you have to work with the body and the feelings that are arising organically, you know, that are just arising out of the body, you know, naturally. That gets to be really powerful to just work on that level. It's very natural, right, on some levels, beyond,
especially
like, indigenous.
Especially if you can keep it wordless.
Yeah, stay out of the concept.
Right.
And just, yeah, staying out of, like, the conceptual.
In the articulation only of emotion, right? So you're sad, boo-hoo-hoo, you're happy, ha-ha-ha, but not, oh, I think I'm sad because I ought, no. The actual being of it, the actual filling yourself with that because, and again, you know, I don't know if Elizabeth ever said it in so many words or a lot of things that she really hammered into us, but she really left us very much with the feeling and something that I had taken on as a story, and so it seems very true to me that we're not here to learn lessons. We're here to feel.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And learning how to feel deeper and deeper levels is like, it's not easy for people. I don't know. And, you know, a lot of the work that I do, it's actually why I started out as a Buddhist practitioner, but I realized there was tricks that I could do to avoid feeling, right? There was ways that I could use that practice to sort of disconnect instead of go into. So that's a lot of what led me to working with plant medicine, merging that with my healing work, because it brought a level of feeling and honesty that was beyond the mind, right?
Yes.
So then we started getting a lot more real, right? We started getting to the root, and we couldn't trick ourselves as quickly, right? We have this other medicine inside that's wanting us to feel. And I thought together those are what made such a powerful combination for my work.
My teacher says you must get up very early to get up before yourself.
I never heard that. Right. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, we're all trying to figure out how to be with ourselves. You know, it's not easy. It's a lifetime of work to be with ourselves and not to get tricked by, you know, ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I had apprentices here, they're like, okay, I've come here to be my authentic self. And so often
the first round of authentic self is, this is how nasty and obnoxious I can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I tolerate it, but I say, you know, this is not actually your authentic self.
Right. This is just the conditioned self. Mm-hmm.
This is the part you've been pressing down. I understand you have been really rejecting and pressing this down, and now it really wants to come out. But that doesn't mean that it's your authentic self. It's just, you know, we have to give it a little space, and then let's really see, because I don't know your experience, Spring, but again, a story I believe very, very firmly in, that everyone's authentic self is loving.
Absolutely. Innately, we're all incredible light. You know, we just get so tangled, and then it's like it's a bit like quicksand, right? Once you get one foot stuck in it, and the stories are endless and the confusion, it's like we can go into that, or we can start detangling by being present and feeling. And it sounds so simplistic, you know, it's like just sit and feel. But that's everyone's worst idea of a good time, is sitting and feeling painful emotions, right? Well, our culture really does not know how to deal with that. And I think it's why it makes us dangerous, or all, you know, when we're not able to hold that. So
because we need to hold it for each, we need to hold it with each other.
Yeah, right, lovingly.
It's such a grace if you're in grief to have someone who can sit with you in the grief without needing to turn your grief off.
Yeah. And to it's like, yeah, I agree with you. I was having a challenging time, just to give you an idea about how much we do need each other. I hit by a DHL truck while I was walking a couple of weeks ago, so I ended up getting like some broken bones. And while I was recovering in my house, I had this idea, like, if only I had a 1-800 dial a grandma. And I could have one of those amazing grandmas come over for a few hours, you know, help me tidy up a little bit, but mostly give me support. I know. And I started to think about all these, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's all these southern grandmas here. And I was like, you know, we could put this whole community to work by having 1-800 dial a grandma when you're having a terrible time. Your grandma, your adopted grandma could come over and just help you be with whatever is difficult. I don't know, that might be something. Maybe I'll start that business.
Well, I think that you would have a lot of takers on that.
I think so.
And hopefully a lot of grandmas would like to go out and be someone's grandma for a few hours.
I know. Wouldn't that be beautiful? Because there are so many elders that are in positions where they have a lot to give, but maybe, yeah, but it goes to the point of how much, when we're feeling and we're working through stuff, how power it is to have that compassionate presence with us.
Yes, that presence that allows us to feel in a space where we can feel. So often when we're having a big feeling, we tell ourselves that we can't really do that because we're making others uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's definitely one big story. Yeah, if we were to go into it, or we can't handle it, we don't know what to do with it, or also, I don't know about you.
Right, it's not,
yeah.
We don't need, it's not even self-reflection, it's a reflection on others, and I'm not even saying that it's necessarily wrong. I had a devastating thing happen to me, and I decided I was going to walk into the woods until I got to the edge of the earth and walk off the edge of the earth. And now, granted, I discovered I could not walk that far, but what really brought me back was that I was concerned that others were worried about me.
So your empathy brought you back.
Because I wasn't worried about me. I was devastated. I was destroyed. I wasn't worried about me at all. But I was worried that others were worried about me.
Well, that's a good thing then, right?
It's a wonderful thing that we have that others respond. Right? And certainly as a person who's dealt with chronic pain for a good number of years now, it's intriguing to see the ways that even like in my intimate family that people react to my pain and what I can do. Like, for instance, there was a while where one of the ways I was trying out being able to express my pain without disturbing others too much was to hiss.
Well, could you say that one more time?
So if there was like a wave of pain rolling over me, I would hiss.
Oh, okay.
And my daughter said, "Don't do that. I don't like that." And so it was interesting to me. To try out, because I know that one of the things I need to do is I need to have a vocal expression.
Right, to help you work through it.
It distracts me. Right, and you know, of course, the science behind it is rather amusing. If you stick somebody's hand in ice water and let them cuss, they can keep their hand in ice water twice as long.
Right, because they're kind of like, yeah, they're there, and they're also a little removed from. They have a different focus. I understand.
So, when you work with, I want to stop for a second and do something important. I want you to tell people where they can get your books and how they can get in touch with you. That's the important thing.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, well, people can find my books. They're on Amazon. I have a book about meditation. I also wrote a book about Harriet Tubman's spirit, and that's on Amazon. And they can find me mostly through my website or social media. My website is springwasham.com, and that has my whole schedule and lots of things on there. So, yeah, people can check that out.
Great. So now I want to ask you, where do you start with people in terms of meditation? What do you suggest that someone do? Is it useless to start a meditation practice if you can't do it every day?
Well, I like to tell people to just start very simply, wherever you can do it, in your home. Some people do it in their car. Some people do it while they're walking. Yeah, I just have people just come into their body and just begin by focusing on their breath. I keep it very, very simple, because sometimes if you get too esoteric or you involve too many visualizations of different colored lights or objects, I just say, you know what, focus on the inhale, focus on the exhale, and let's just learn how to be present in our bodies moment after moment. And honestly, that continues to be, for me, one of my most powerful practices. 5 minutes a day, sometimes you might sit longer, but the benefits of learning how to rest in presence between the stories is you start to feel a better sense of well-being. You know, it's like it's very subtly powerful. I guess that's an oxymoron, right? It's like subtle but powerful. that the more you step out of the stories of the mind and you focus on, you know, the breath or, you know, feeling your belly, the inhale and the exhale. To me, I love practicing with people in that way. And we start to grow in our capacity to do it, to be present. And the mind always wanders. So I tell people, don't worry about that. The mind wanders, just bring it back. Bring it back, bring it back. You know, the habit of coming back to your breath, to your body is so good. And I just really start very simply with people because I don't think meditation or any of these teachings has to be complicated because people already know. It's like I'm just reminding them. They've just forgotten. I feel like I'm talking to that beautiful part of them that already knows how to do it. It's just like, oh yeah, I forgot. Okay, here we go. Right? So I have nothing new to say, you know? I always tell people that. I'm just reminding you of your own innate beauty, your goodness, and the practice that will help you remember, you know? So very simple.
And to be a practice holder is a very worthy task. To hold the space of the practice, to be the place that can be come back to. You said, oh, yes, well, the mind wanders and then you come back. And by being a practice holder, you are the place that can be come back to.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you were talking, I was getting this image of like somebody who like a drill sergeant, not in a bad way, but you know, like in the military or if in a group activity, there's always some leader who sets the pace. Like if you're running a race, there's always the people who are sort of at the front, right? They set a kind of tone, and then the whole group gets going by that person, right? It's like, okay, here we go. Here we go. They've run this race before. They know how to do it, right? And even if we're way in the back, we still kind of see them in the distance. Like, okay, they're running still. I guess I better keep running. And that's what I look at when I teach. Yeah.
When I was at the Amerind Museum, they were talking about the native sports of that area, through northern Mexico and the Sonoran Desert and all up in there, and how that's exactly how they view it, that it's not like, oh, that person up front is winning. No, that person up front is creating space for us to follow.
Yeah, they're like exactly, and you could do that whenever you go on a hike with a group of people. There'll always be a couple at the top of the pack, kind of at the and they're not winning. They're leading. That's I really see how meditation teachers do it. They sit with the group and they hold that space, right?
They
45 minutes. They hold it. And you open your eyes and you look at them and you go, well, they're still meditating. Okay. You close your eyes again. Right? And you look around and then you go, okay, I guess we're still doing it. You know, and that's exactly how it is when you're running a race, right? You're like, oh, it's not over. There's a people at the, we're still hiking. Okay, keep going. And then you kind of surrender, right, into it.
Oh. Well, I could talk to you for quite a long time, but they're going to shut down on us. So I want to ask if there's anything that you wanted to talk about that you haven't had a chance to speak of yet.
No, I just really want to encourage people to be gentle on themselves and to remember that meditation practice is about falling in love with yourself and the present moment. It's about kindness. You know, so just be gentle. The heart knows the way.
It's a path
of love. We are reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients, and you are bringing beautiful mindfulness into the weaving so that we see not just the weaving but the thread, and not even just the thread but the twist and the ply of the thread right down to the most subtle detail. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Thank you, Sarah Ellen, for helping me restore herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine. Green blessings, everybody. Until next week. Bye-bye.